heard about Anchor. It is the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your own phone or computer. Anchor will also distribute your podcast so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more podcast platforms. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today.
Folks, mark your calendars. The 2021 NFL schedule is out. Danny's here. Big Rat's here. We're all here to break it down. Guys, it's a new season. How are we feeling? Especially, I haven't talked to either one of you since the draft anyway.
Yeah, man. Feeling great. Got the mega powers back on. So expect some heated arguments. It's always a fun time. You know, it's bipolar. Miami Heat and my New York Knicks are fighting for a playoff seating. So that's another point. But yeah, I'm looking forward to breaking down the schedule.
It'll be fun. It's always a fun day, like analyzing the primetime schedule, the Thanksgiving games, which I'm sure we'll get into. I care very much about those every year, so yeah, it'll be fun.
I'm gonna say with the Thanksgiving games, I just sent out a tweet last night predicting what I thought the three would be. I actually got one of them right, spot on.
What, Bears Lions again?
No, I actually said Vikings Lions. Because it's been Bears, I think, like three of the last 5 years. But no, I actually said Raiders Cowboys for the 4 o'clock game, just because I know it's CBS's turn to do Dallas, and Cowboys Raiders is a lot more of an appeal and an old time rivalry than Broncos Cowboys.
Yeah,
yeah.
Is that in Vegas?
No. It's in Dallas.
No, it's in
Dallas.
It's always in Dallas.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But no, week one, we start off, let me just pull this up quickly. Week one, we start off with the Buccaneers hosting the Cowboys. I'm going to ask you two, do you think the Cowboys are the right opponent, or would you have put someone else in there?
Looking at Tampa Bay's schedule, I would have put the Bills in there for sure to open up the season, man. You have to. That's just, you know, you're just kicking off the season with a Super Bowl winner and an AFC runner up. You know, that I think that would have went so perfectly. It's not a bad choice. You know, like last year they opened up with Texans and Chiefs. You know, that it could have been something like that. But you know, it's nice to see Dak come back and, you know, get the Cowboys rolling again. But I don't have too many complaints, but it's a lot better than the Sunday night game, I'll say that.
I was fine with it. You know, Cowboys, like, everyone likes to mock them. They're not really America's team because they've been so bad for so long. I mean, Albert Breer tweeted this today. I mean, according to TV ratings, they are America's team. There's a reason they're in primetime 5 times a year. Like, they get more out-of-market eyeballs than any other team in the league. So, you know, from a broadcast and production standpoint, I think it just does make a lot of sense to put them week one. I think the other choice was maybe a rematch with New Orleans, especially if Jameis was starting, like the intrigue and that rivalry. But, you know, other than that, I think it's a fine choice.
Exactly. Like, that's the one thing, you're right. Like, part of me, I kind of thought that, hey, maybe they'll do Pats and Cowboys for week one Sunday night, just because that's a big two-market game, but then also, too, because of the TV deals getting done with Robert Kraft and Jerry Jones, obviously being the brain trust behind that. But you know what? It's a game that everyone's going to watch. Like, we complain about these games, but at the end of the day, we're still going to watch them.
Yeah, especially opening night, I mean, for sure.
We watch anything.
And also, too, there was an argument on First Take today that said, what's the bigger storyline, Dak's comeback or Brady's quest for 8? And I'm like, right away, it's for as much as I love Tom, I think this game's going to say more about Dak Prescott. Like, we know what Tom's going to do, but I think more eyeballs are going to be pressed to see, hey, how is this Cowboys defense improved, and how is Dak Prescott going to bounce back from his injury? It was First Take, by the way, where I saw the whole argument, hot take.
Yeah, I mean, it's 100%, like, it's 100% the Dak thing. I think, you know, people are curious to see how he'll play against the champs, you know, so, like, and, you know, you can kind of talk yourself into it. Like, their whole sell that their offense is supposed to be electric. Also, you know, Tom Brady, 32nd in the NFL under pressure last year, passer rating under pressure last year, 32nd in the league. So if you want to put an opponent to highlight his ability to not look old, I mean, the Cowboys defense is just perfect for that. So it works out in that sense as well.
Little Super Bowl hangover?
Probably not against Dan Quinn. Quinn's defense.
No, we all know the last time that Tom Brady played a Dan Quinn defense, what in a big spot, we know what happened there.
And then left.
Oh, but just looking at the 1 o'clock slate, man, there's some good games. There's also two just ugly games, like with the Falcons and the Eagles and the Texans and the Jags. But besides that, like we got Steelers Bills, Jets Panthers, which I know Daniel have his eyes on, Vikings versus Bengals, San Francisco Detroit, Arizona Tennessee, Indy and Seattle, and one game that I think that could be really good: the football team taking on the Chargers.
Yeah, to get to that Jets and Panthers one, man, I love the NFL for doing that. And they tend to do that. You know, they had us play the Buccaneers week one the year that we traded Revis to them. So they live for that drama, you know. So to have that week one, I could see myself going down to Carolina just to, you know, just for that game. Because I would have had that one circled on my calendar for a while since Sam got traded there. You know, I'm glad, I'm very gracious that they didn't put us against, you know, the Bills or the Dolphins or the Patriots week one. Because, you know, that would suck for Zach Wilson to see one of those defenses right off the bat and, you know, go from there. So at least, you know, the Panthers defense isn't that great and gives them a chance to, you know, play some good football.
I feel like there'll be a lot of Jets fans that are going to make that trek down to Charlotte for that game. Because also, I feel like Charlotte's a market where you can go to as an away fan. You're not going to feel threatened or like any aggression is going to be had towards you. There may be some idiots, but I don't think you're going to be like in danger like you would be, say, if back in the day you were going to Oakland or somewhere like that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, man, I went to Buffalo, man. I got shit in 2015, so I've been there. I know how it is.
Well, wouldn't you have preferred it? I mean, I get the whole like week one allure of it. Wouldn't you have preferred like their Thursday night game? They play what, the Colts? Like, isn't that like a good excuse to put the Panthers game? Like, okay, we have to give the Jets one primetime game by default, so let's just give them the Panthers game where you can build to it the whole day, the drama. Or, well, if you do it early, though, it guarantees that Darnold's actually still the quarterback. So I guess from that sense, it works.
Yeah, no doubt. I would have liked it on Thursday. But, you know, if they were going to do it week one, you know, like I'd rather, much rather have that against, like I said, the Bills, the Patriots, or the Dolphins. So, you know, just get the drama out of the way, you know, have a little storyline to start the season and go from there.
And that's setting up for you playing Griff's team, as I said incessantly on this podcast last year, Bill Belichick against rookie quarterbacks, week two.
Yep.
Home opener, MetLife Stadium. That's going to be a welcome to the NFL game for Zach Wilson. Also, I actually have a Jets hot take about the rookie class. I don't think it's going to be Wilson or Vera Tucker that's going to be their best rookie this year. I think it's going to be Michael Carter, by the way.
I thought you were going to say Elijah Moore. It definitely has the potential to be Michael Carter. It's just, you know, we have to see. Like I see his ceiling being Ray Rice, to be honest with you. So if he had to go to a scheme that fits him perfectly, it's our scheme. So as long as he performs well in training camp, which won't be hard to do, we have literally no good depth at running back. You know, we're almost as bad as the Dolphins are there. You know, the job is his, bro. So that's a good take. That is a good take.
Well, I mean, the only other options are Tevin Coleman, which obviously Robert Saleh and Mike LaFleur are used to, but I feel like he's going to be more of your receiving back, and then I think P. Ryan's going to be the short yardage guy. So I think Michael Carter, too, for fantasy football, I like the pick in like a later round flex pick.
I'm not going to ignore Danny's like casual swipe at me right there. Like, we're almost as terrible running back as the Dolphins are. But secondly, Tevin Coleman could be the thing you see, like kind of like with Gase and Gore, where like early in the season, especially, like he's getting more carries than you would expect because of that familiarity. And then as the course of the season goes on, it changes. And hey, Ray Rice in his prime, you know, before like he got in trouble and all that. I mean, that dude was one of the top five running backs in football. Like that, that is no small thing. If you were to turn into Ray, if he could do what Ray Rice in his prime for like a full career, I mean, Jesus, that's really strong.
I agree with that. No, I do think Elijah Moore is going to be good as well, but just because if you're going to build someone to be your top receivers on the Jets, I think it's going to be Mims and Moore. I just don't see – I see Corey Davis more as, like, that slot or that wide receiver three guy. Just I feel like if I had to pick, I just feel like Mims or, like I said, Moore are going to be the better options too.
Yeah, a lot of people are sleeping on Mims. They forget about him. But, you know, that guy has a lot of potential. Corey Davis, he's more of, you know, like I said, when we came on here for free agency, I wasn't too crazy about the signing. But, you know, I could see him being a safety blanket, you know, a possession receiver, what he is. He's not a burner. Mims isn't a burner either. Now they have Elijah Moore, who by far is the best burner on this team. The thing is, how is he going to fit now with Jameson Crowder still there? So I don't know how the snap distribution is going to go. They just worked out Tavon Austin today for whatever reason. So if they want to move off of Jameson's salary, which I think would be a terrible thing to do because you have to stack up all your weapons as much as possible for your rookie receiver, you're going to regret because he's going to, I promise you right now, Griff, if they let go of Jameson Crowder, he ends up in New England and you're going to love him.
I don't know if I want or don't want them to cut him because in one of my dynasty leagues, I recently just traded all my draft picks for Christian McCaffrey, CeeDee Lamb, Matt Ryan, and Rondale Moore. And so I'm very reliant in that league on Jameson Crowder. So on one hand, I don't want the Jets to cut him. But on the other hand, it's like, well, if they cut him and he goes to New England, I mean, or anywhere else, that'll probably raise his value. So
that guy is damn good. Yeah, that guy is a professional slot receiver.
I've always been a fan. And by the way, Danny, I always played him in fantasy the last 2 years. Because no one ever plays him because it's like it's a Gase offense. They suck. But a Gase offense always funnels targets to the slot receivers. So Crowder just ate up, especially in PPR leagues.
And he brings touchdowns, Breshard, too.
I was going to ask you, Danny, is Breshard Perriman still on the team or no?
He's on the Lions now.
Detroit. Yeah.
Oh, right. That receiving core is just terrible to begin with. Fuck, that's just an obscure receiving core. Just moving along here with the 4 o'clock games. We got, man, there's three games in here that are going to be good ones. Cleveland versus Kansas City, Green Bay, New Orleans. For some reason, the battle of mediocre between the Giants and the Broncos, and the Dolphins and the Patriots. Oh, man. But again, Big Rat and I's team, we're duking it out. The only thing I'm going to say, Big Rat, I'm going to make a bold prediction about our game right now. It's going to be called by Ian Eagle and Charles Davis. It just smells of that kind of like announcing duo.
Yeah, especially with that competition, you figure Romo and Nance probably get the Chiefs game. And
yeah.
By the way, last year, like towards the end of the season, Romo was calling the Chiefs like every week. It was absurd. Like literally every game, he got Kansas City every week. He got their Browns playoff game. He did the AFC title game, and he did the Super Bowl. It was absurd. He's on like a 10 straight game streak of calling Kansas City games. It's wild. And it will continue.
Well, I mean, when it was Jim Nance and Phil Sims, it was like that for New England, or even with Dallas, it's like that for Buck and Aikman, which the last time I listened to a Cowboys game against the Patriots called by Buck and Aikman, I wanted to shoot myself.
Well, in any event, I think it will be a fun one. And, of course, you know, the NFL schedule makers could have thrown the Dolphins a bone. They're not going to have Will Fuller week one. Let's schedule them against, you know, like at New Orleans or some game that they're probably not going to win anyways. But, no, they gave us a division opponent in a very important game, and that's the game they play without Will Fuller.
To be fair, Will Fuller plays 5 games a year, so he might not be there for both games.
He played a full season last year before getting suspended. I don't want to hear it.
I mean, he had that Thanksgiving Day game where he just popped off against the Lions.
He played the first 11 games straight. He didn't miss a game. He got suspended because of steroids, which is fine. I'm okay with his steroid use if it raises his odds of staying healthy.
Oh yeah. Man.
Everybody in professional sports is on something. Let's not kid ourselves here.
I mean, if Julian Edelman got popped, I think anyone can get popped.
Tua will get popped one day. You see these videos on his pictures on his Instagram, him flashing his biceps and all this and that. One day.
Wow, less mobility than he already has? Jeez.
Yeah. He just tested positive for COVID, unfortunately, so hopefully he gets better soon.
All right, I will make an early, a 7 months early prediction on this podcast, Griff. So the Dolphins will lose that game. Tua will look bad. Danny will have a field day. And then the next week, kind of like the Browns last year, they played Baltimore in week one. They got humiliated. Baker looked horrendous. And then their offense started playing better the rest of the year. I think you'll see that with the Dolphins.
You know what? I'm not going to say anything. I think the same. My big game for you, Bill, guys, is how you look week two because – I know you hate to say it, but Josh Allen for some reason likes to have career days against the Buffalo. Miami Dolphins. So you guys, both of you guys, like a little two step hops, like with Dolphins, Bills, Panthers, Patriots, and then Dolphins, Jets. It's kind of funny how it's, hey, it's the three of us on here, and it just happens to be that I, the host, play each of your teams within the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, I don't think you have much to worry about week two. You guys should easily take that game because, you know, why wouldn't you? If you don't, then either I'm feeling real optimistic or you're not feeling good about your team, one of the two, or it could be both. So, yeah, it's definitely going to be a test for us week two. You know, rookie quarterbacks against Bill Belichick, you know the whole story with that doesn't usually end well. The thing I'm a little worried about is Robert Saleh's schemes got torched last year by AFC East teams, except for the Jets, of course. But
Welcome to the Bills game.
Yeah, so that's really what I'm looking for as far as how we match up with the AFC East. And if the scheme isn't right, then we might have a little problem on our hands that no one's talking about. But until then, you know, we'll see. I'm going to be optimistic. I love our offensive coordinator, so that's what I'm really looking forward to. But, you know, as far as Saleh being a defensive guru and stuff, I have to see it against the AFC East before I claim him that.
You know what? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll just say with Saleh, it's not that different from Dan Quinn, I think, or from the Cowboys who have Dan Quinn, but before this year as well. These teams that play, like, that play heavy zone, that play a lot of cover three, that like to play with two or three linebackers on the field a lot. When you have like great personnel, it could be elite. Like when the Niners make the Super Bowl 2 years ago with just such great a great D-line, some the best linebacker play in the country, and good guys in the secondary, it works really well. But when the personnel isn't up to sniff, you open yourself to getting torched. And I think that's kind of part. I think that's why the Niners last year, they had some games where their defense was really good. But then there's other games where there's injuries and they're playing against a good quarterback or a good offense, and they'll just get lit up because zone-heavy teams like can just get torched like that in today's NFL.
Yeah, so basically it relies on the pass rush, man. And, I mean, I know they were out a shitload of players, Bosa and whoever else they were out. So they weren't getting to the passer, man. So, I mean, that could have factored in. But another thing is we have no corners. We probably have the worst starting corner group in the league. I mean, I still don't know why they haven't went out and signed Steven Nelson from the Steelers. But, yeah, man.
Walk on Marcus May.
We'll see about that. I think he's asking for unrealistic prices here with him. But yeah, man. I mean, their cornerback's going to be a problem if they don't hit the passer. And we might be literally a bottom five defense in the league. So we'll see.
I'm just excited to see how your line looks with Quinnen Williams potentially taking the next step, even though he did suffer that, I believe, ankle injury or foot injury. And then also I know how excited you are about Carl Lawson. So the Jets are going to be an exciting team to see. But we talked about this off camera, before we went on. Man, that Sunday nighter, like, I literally want to look at the NFL and go, what the fuck is wrong with you? Out of all the games, like, Big Rap brought this up saying how we know that the Bears are a big TV market, but, like, you... Not for week one, like for like week 10 or 12, maybe.
The Bears?
Yeah, I agree. Go ahead. Go ahead. Yeah, no. Like I was saying, like, you don't even know if Justin Fields is going to be starting week one, man. Like, no one's tuning in to watch Andy Dalton play Sunday Night Football. What's the point of that? So there was a lot better games they could have chose for this. But like Big Rat said, man, the Chicago media, you know, they have new life to them. Their fans are excited about this year. So I just wouldn't have won with that game.
It's also putting a lot on a rookie quarterback. It's like, you know, like putting Justin Fields in primetime a lot, which, I mean, as we know, primetime games disproportionately means you're probably playing, you know, better than average teams more often by virtue of being in primetime. And so that's just kind of asking a lot. And here's a stat for you. I have it right here. Number of primetime games for each team. So the most anyone gets is five, right? And the teams that have fives are all the teams you would expect. The Cowboys, the Packers, the Ravens, the Chiefs, the Bucks, you know, the standards. Then a bunch of teams
Saints.
Saints. So the teams that got four, the Bears are one of them. The Cleveland Browns are not. And the Browns, who, you know, made the divisional round and everyone's very excited about them, they got three primetime games this year. The Bears got four. So the Bears were considered a higher priority than the Browns, even though everyone knows the Browns are like a much better team and project to be a much better team. That right there tells you the power of the TV market. But even then, like we said, have it later in the year. Have it at least make it more likely that you pick the one primetime game literally all season where it's the most likely that he doesn't play. I'm not saying he will or he won't. I'm just saying of all the primetime games, the one he's most likely not going to play is the first one. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, like you're exactly right. Like you're expected to throw him in there. I also thought too, because the Browns do play Christmas against the Packers, which should be a very intriguing game, but it's 4:30. But yeah, I'm surprised about that. But you know what? I guess they just look at the market, and then the TV dollars, like proving, hey, look, this, like the TV deal made $110 billion for the league over the next 10 years. And like, I guess a lot of that money is going to come from markets like Chicago. So it also goes to show how much they value certain markets over others, no matter what the on-field product looks like. That's why the Dallas Cowboys always have 5 primetime games every year. They could go 3-13. They'll have their NBCs, they'll have their ESPNs, and then they'll have their Thursday night games, which are going to be on Amazon Prime starting in 2022. And then Monday night, we finish it off with a game. Actually, I'm not too mad about the Ravens versus the Raiders. The only thing I'm going to say is I'm actually glad they took away the second Monday night game, because usually it's two teams I don't care about and I'll watch till halftime then go to bed, because I'm not staying up till 1:30 anymore to watch a football game.
I don't know. I like the two Monday night games, man. I usually stay up for them. You know, it's just week one, man. Everyone's been waiting so long, you know, like let's watch as much football as possible. You know, it was a good thing for me, but I understand why they didn't. Is this one in Vegas or no?
Yeah, it's in Vegas.
Yeah, so that's a nice little thing, you know. They get to advertise Vegas with their fans for the first time and all that, and it will be early, you know. It's going to be 5 o'clock in Vegas, so it's going to look all nice and stuff. But as far as the game goes, you know, I don't expect Vegas to really do much this year, you know, with the way they gutted their O line, and I don't know what are they really doing at receiver other than their draft pick,
Willie, right? Sneed.
Willie Sneed and the, what's the guy? Henry Ruggs. So, I mean, I'm still not a believer in Derek Carr. So, I don't think that team's really going to win a lot this year. But, you know, for the Vegas factor, yeah, that's a good choice to put them Monday night. I agree with that.
Yeah, I definitely think first Vegas is – I was thinking Vegas's first game with fans. That should be in prime time, no matter when it is, whether it's week one or week two or week three or whatever. So, if it has to be week one, I mean, you could have put it on Sunday Night Football. That would have been fine. But fine, Monday night – with the time difference and all that, I understand why it's appealing. Yeah, I mean, it should be fun. There's intrigue, you know. They're both teams should be fun to watch. Like, it's going to be hard to predict much in terms of the outcome of the game this early in the season, but there's a funny trend with Vegas teams. If you analyze them the last 2 years, they follow a very similar pattern. In September and October, they win a lot more games than you expect them to. Like, when they beat the Saints last year at home in week two, they beat the Chiefs on the road. And then in December, the last 2 years, they've been horrible. Like, they just fall off a cliff from Thanksgiving onwards. So they'll probably do what they always do. They'll probably start, like, 5-3 and then find their way to finishing 8-8 with a negative point differential.
8-9, Big Rat.
8-9. Oh, God. That's going to take some getting used to.
They play the Dolphins early, don't they?
They play who early?
The Dolphins, right? Early week 5 or 7?
It's week 3, yeah. In Vegas also.
Oh, not good for you.
Yeah, the Dolphins' September schedule is really, really hard.
You know that the Raiders want that game, too, after what happened last year, for sure.
They may. They're gonna be in for a rude awakening, though. Remember, now they couldn't cover Mac Hollins down the right sideline. Here comes fucking Will Fuller, so have fun.
Man, you are so high on Will Fuller. It's insane.
Will Fuller was awesome last year. Like, anyone who watches football should know that Will Fuller was excellent last year before he got hurt.
I mean, no, I'm not denying he's a very, very good receiver, but, you know, it's just the stuff that comes with him.
Okay, but the track record of the past 4 years, Deshaun Watson is, his numbers with Will Fuller in and out of the lineup are pretty startling. Like, it's a significant difference. Significant. It was significant. It was significant when DeAndre Hopkins was there, too.
We shall see.
The one thing I got to say, though, about the Raiders that I love is how everyone's like saying, yo, Gruden's going to get fired. I'm like, no, what's going to happen is if they have this bad season again, Gruden's going to throw Mayock out to the wolves, and he's going to be the one getting fired. But so that's what's going to happen. Gruden's unprotected, or not unprotected. Like he's protected from getting fired unless they go like 1-16. Like I just can't see it. He's going to throw Mike Mayock under the bus because even now, yeah, like he's been laying low. You have not heard from him at all since the draft.
And their owner is also notoriously one of like the cheapest. I don't want to say cheap. Like he's not as rich as other owners in the NFL. So is he going to be willing to just eat 6 years on a $10 million coaching contract while also paying another coach for next year? It just seems unlikely.
Yeah, I definitely agree that Mayock's gone this year, man. It's just like their last couple of drafts. What are they doing? It's like they only scout the fucking national championship game. Like, I don't know what the Raiders do in the draft, and clearly it's not working. So I don't expect them to have a winning season, and I expect moves to be made.
Well, it's probably the only college football games Gruden watches.
I wouldn't doubt it.
It's like literally the only two, like the like two of the biggest reaches, 2019 taking Farrell at 4 and then taking Alex Leatherwood at 17, like two of the biggest reaches in the NFL. And even to grabbing guys like Damon Arnett and like stuff like that, like the only picks that have kind of panned out are Josh Jacobs. But even now they went out and signed Kenyon Drake. So like, I'm literally looking at the Raiders like, okay, what the hell is going on here? Cause I don't know how much hockey you guys follow, but I think this team has to have success like the Golden Knights within the, not just with tourists, but with the Las Vegas community. If they can build a solid fan base that way, they'll be fine. If not, I think there's a time sooner than later where it's going to be more away fans than home fans like the Chargers get.
Those away fans will come in hungover, like tilted out of their minds. There will be fights in the stands. It'll be a sight to see. It'll be interesting to watch.
That'll be me one day when the Pats go to Vegas. I'll tell you that right now.
And the Dolphins play them this year. So
in Vegas?
Yeah, in Vegas.
We gotta go, man.
We just talked about it. Yeah, it might.
You gotta go.
We're thinking about it. I'll say that much.
We're not gonna go game by game, obviously, but there's a couple games I want to point out. If you folks are wondering when Big Rad's podcast schedule is going to look like, expect him here on September 16th when the Washington football team takes on the New York Giants on Thursday Night Football. Why? Because Big Rad and I have a thing. Daniel Jones is on primetime. Big Rad's on the podcast with me.
And it couldn't have been more perfectly timed when the week before our teams play each other. So there's a built-in excuse to talk about that. And then the week after, both of our teams play the other two division opponents.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's so perfectly timed out. And then the other ones I saw was November 1st, they're on Monday Night Football. And I want to say November 22nd or 29th, they're on Monday Night Football. But their two ESPN games are against the Chiefs and the Bucks. Like, talk. If I'm a Giants fan, I'm sweating that one a little bit.
Yeah, I think with the Giants, man, I think they're getting heavily overrated by their fans. I expect them to have an okay season, but, like, still, are you guys believers in Daniel Jones at all?
No.
I'm not, man. And, you know, they think coming in and signing Kenny Galladay is going to solve all their problems, and bringing in Adoree Jackson for the defense, who can't stay on the field, who the Titans literally didn't pick up his option, which wouldn't have hurt them at all because they have no one at corner. They brought in Janoris Jenkins, for Christ's sake. I don't know. Like, I'm not a believer in the Giants right now.
They drafted Kadarius Toney, and then
terrible pick, by the way, awful pick.
I still think they should have gone O-line.
It reminds me a lot of if I want to give a sad analogy, kind of like the Dolphins in 2013, 2014. You get your young quarterback, you spend a lot of money in free agency and the draft on wide receivers. Like when they gave Mike Wallace a big contract, they drafted Jarvis Landry in the second round. They re-signed Brian Hartline. You invest heavily at receiver. Your O-line is still bad. Your offensive coordinator is still bad. And so you go from like a bottom of the barrel team to like an 8-8 team, and that's kind of about it.
You know, man. I have a great metaphor. Oh, sorry, Danny. Can I just say something for a second?
Yeah, of course.
I have a great metaphor for Daniel Jones. Say if there's a group of three guys, and they're all test driving a Ferrari. The first two do it like, well, okay, no problem. But you're worried about the third friend potentially crashing the car. That for me is Daniel Jones. Like, it's like, like, look, they did the same thing that they did with Josh Allen, where it's like, hey, we got the coach, we've given you all this, like, these weapons, we're basically building the team around you. So this is honestly, this is a year where for him where it's sink or swim. It's either, look, you're going to be our franchise guy going forward, or they're looking for another quarterback in next year's draft.
Yeah, and the thing about that, what I was going to say, is they did save themselves a little bit because they're going to have the ammo if they want to move up in the draft next year with that trade for the Bears.
Yeah.
So I mean, if Daniel Jones doesn't cut it this year, man, Gettleman, he's got to move on.
It's the same problem that that Tua faced a little bit early in free agency, but also like the Eagles with Jalen Hurts are also going to have the same problem. If you're a quarterback of a team that's going to have multiple first round draft picks in the next draft, it's a lot of pressure. Because they can more easily replace you than most teams can when they have a struggling quarterback. So, yeah, it's gonna the Giants will be fine long term, but in the short term, it's concerning.
They also have next year's draft. Like, I love how everyone says it's not as good as this year's. Obviously, the level of talent isn't, but there's guys that are gonna be there in the teens and 20s of the first round. So we'll wait and see what happens. But next year, I just want to clear the air on that. With the whole quarterback thing, and even too, I would argue right now the best player that's probably going to come out is not even an offensive player. It's the defensive edge from Oregon, Thibodeau.
What a beast! Yeah, he's a beast. I love the cornerback at LSU too, man. I'm hoping we get him.
Stingley.
Yeah, I'm really high on him.
Also, I know people aren't really happy with the quarterback class. I'll just say, like, as a Miami Hurricanes fan, Sam Howell has been torching us since he was a true freshman in his second ever college football game. He still torched the Miami Hurricanes defense. He's real good, real good. People will like him.
I don't get the Keaton Slovis hype though. I see him a lot going top five in the drafts. I just don't see it. I don't know why people are doing that.
Yeah, someone's gonna reach in on him. Like the one guy I would say I like better is like JT Daniels out of Georgia, or even I don't mind the kid from Iowa State, Purdy. Purdy's not that bad.
Man, you got Rattler too. Yeah, it should be all right. It should be a good draft.
Rattler,
I have a hot take about that. Rattler is not even the best player on his team. They have a wide receiver. I think I gotta look the kid's name up. I think it's Marvin Mims. Like, Marvin Mims. He's the best player on the Sooners. Like for offensive wise.
Yeah, it's looking like another really good wide receiver class again, you know, which keeps starts to stack, you know, 3 years in a row, 4 years in a row.
Yeah, it's just,
you know what?
It's just kind of like, there's like everyone's playing through wide receiver sets, four wide receiver sets now. So like there's more and more receivers that are good coming out.
I also think that, well, two things I'm going to say quickly. One is that the wide receiver class, I feel like, seeing how good this year's class was, I think that's why guys like Juju Smith-Schuster weren't getting the big bucks from teams, why he signed for like 10 less, I think it was like $9 million from the Steelers, and that's why like only really Galladay got the big payday. And then like, because they see how interchangeable these receivers are. And the only other thing I was going to say is I still think that the Giants were going to take Devontae Smith, and that's the only reason why they did the trade.
I agree.
It ended up working in their benefit. I mean, they not wasted it, but they made a mistake by picking Tony, in my opinion as well, Danny. But you would rather have, you know, the extra first round pick next year and like Elijah Moore, if they had taken Elijah Moore, than just Devonta, in my opinion.
No, I completely agree with that. The only other thing I'm going to say quickly, the one thing I want to say about this draft, and it's about the running back class, and Danny's going to agree with me. Can we please stop comparing Travis Etienne to Alvin Kamara, please?
Please, man. And what a terrible freaking pick they made to Jacksonville there, man. Oh, my God. What is Urban doing? And then with the Tebow bullshit this week? Come on, man. That's going to be a clown show over there. Listen, if the Jets were making these moves, that you guys would be clowning them left and right, man. But because no one cares about Jacksonville, they get away with
exactly.
That.
The one thing I'm going to say about that is,
he hired like the controversial Iowa strength coach as well, and then he resigned like a day later because of intense backlash. Like, Urban just doesn't care, man. Like, apparently Urban was going to take Tony if the Giants didn't, which is the hilarious part about it.
Yeah, even too, he admitted it was just like, oh, I wanted Kadarius Tony. Well, I'm like, welcome to the NFL, Urban. The only thing I'm going to say about him, man. This just has the smell and the sense to me of when the Cavaliers hired John Beilein.
Wow.
I just, yeah. something, I mean, I can see that.
I see Saban in Miami with Urban for me. I mean, maybe not to that extent, but as far as like the success rate, I really don't think it's going to work at all.
We'll see. It'll be a very interesting story. I do agree. Like, I don't know if he's going to handle adversity well. Like, he could say now, I'm okay with losing, but that's different than like spending all week working on a game, losing, being devastated by that, and having that happen like 8 or 9 times or 10 times in one season. That's a lot to take in. But just remember, Saban never had a Trevor. That's kind of the wild card.
No, I agree. But I mean, like, who's Trevor throwing to this year? Honestly, who's his number one? Marvin Jones and DJ Chark. He's okay, you know.
LaVisca's good. LaVisca will have a second year breakout. Like, he's really, really good.
Yeah. I like him. I don't love him, but you know, like you didn't really invest in Trevor. You know, the second round, where'd they go? Safety, right?
Well, they got him at TN. They got him another running back,
which he already had. You know, he had. You know, you hit on something. You strike gold with something, and then you say it's not good enough. Like, come on, man. And the most, you know, useless. Not, I wouldn't say useless, but like valueless position in football.
And they're gonna literally run a 3 running back set, which makes no sense because they also brought in Carlos Hyde.
They like, and like everyone says, like, oh, you shouldn't draft them in the first because you can find them anywhere. And everyone always responds, okay, well, you can't actually find them anywhere. They're hard to find. They literally got a UDFA to be one of the best running backs in football. And they had a huge advantage. And they were just like, nah, fuck this. We're still going to do it. Like, God.
From a fantasy perspective, it just kills James Robinson's value.
It hurts ETNs too, like in the short term. Like, Robinson's going to like be an annoying little pest for ETN's ability to produce as a rookie.
I will say this, though. When the Saints had Chris Ivory, Mark Ingram, and Alvin Kamara, they found a way to make it work, but they're not on the Saints level. You know, I just don't think they'll find a way.
That was a better team, better offense. Like, it's just a lot to ask for.
Also, too, Sean Payton, Daryl Bevel is not Sean Payton.
Not at all.
Yeah. I think, and then even too, like going back to the Chris Doyle stuff too, it's not even like he was, you know, accused of saying or doing the racist things that apparently he did. He was straight up bought out because of it. So, like, it's not like, oh, hey, this may have happened. It was, no, this guy was a pure asshole towards players. So it's just like, yeah, I just said the Beeline thing in the sense of like how he did the Tebow stuff and other stuff, but it's just, I think he's going to try to run this team like a college team, and that's not how it works. He's going to get, out of all the quarterbacks, I think Trevor's the most likely to have those, like, welcome to the NFL moments the earliest.
I agree. No, I definitely agree, man. Trevor's in for a rude awakening, man.
Well, so a lot's going to be asked of him, and he's not some, I mean, the dude lost 2 games in 3 years in college. Like, he's going to lose more than that in the first month.
Yep.
Yeah, with him, the biggest thing is how is he going to handle losing? Because, like, he's been basically anointed the golden child since high school.
Yeah, like, in high school, like, he was as dominant in high school. He wasn't just the highest-rated recruit in, like, 15 years or whatever. His team won state championships his junior year, and I believe his senior year, they lost in the championship game. Like, the dude has, like, never lost since he's played football. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, like, I want to look up their schedule quickly just to see what exactly they got to deal with. But, like, you nailed it on the head. It's for them, it's going to be, hey, how, like, can you handle losing and can you get back up from it? It's not going to be this whole, oh, hey, like, you know, Trevor, it's going to be easy, like, yada, yada, yada. Like, nah, it's going to be, hey, how are you going to deal? What's up?
I'm looking at it right now. They got, in week 2, they got Vic Fangio and the Denver Broncos defense.
Oh, man.
That's not good. In week 6, they got Brian Flores' squad coming in. And then in between there, they have the Cardinals, the Bengals, and the Titans. The Cardinals, for whatever reason, I don't know if this is translatable year over year with Vance Joseph. Last year, Tua's best game of the season came against Arizona. Jalen Hurts' best game of the season came against Arizona. Maybe he's the inverse Belichick. Maybe he makes three quarterbacks.
They just don't also play defense.
No, the Cardinals are, like, literally, Steve Keim is one of the most predictable GMs. He'll literally take a reach in the first round, and then he'll strike gold with someone on day 2 or day 3, and then that's kind of like his claim, like how he got Buda Baker and all this other stuff. And, like, he'll kind of say, hey, look, I brought J.J. Watt and DeAndre Hopkins here. So I feel like Keim has leash. If they don't make the playoffs, Cliff's gone. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I saw people saying, like, oh, is Kyler Murray under pressure? I'm like, no, Kyler's the guy. He's not going anywhere. It's Cliff that you got to worry about if you're an Arizona Cardinal fan.
Did you see the report that the Saints had a deal with the Cardinals to move up to draft Mac Jones if the Patriots didn't take him?
I saw the one that involved you guys and that because you guys traded up with the Vikings that the Saints were almost going to trade up to 14, which I kind of thank you for doing that.
Yeah, man.
It's crazy.
I know I kind of talk bad about him, but you know what? Mac's my quarterback, and I hope for the best.
You kind of have no choice but to root for the best. And
yeah, no, I'm not going to root against, like, anyone on my team. Like, you don't want to do that unless, like, I guess unless your team sucks.
Not you, but just Patriots fans, stop with the damn Tom Brady comparisons, man. Just stop.
That's not me. That is not me.
Yeah, not you, but I'm seeing
the only thing I will say is that he can chuck the ball and he's got great pocket awareness. But they're going to run the same offense with him as they did with Brady. You know, the short yardage, a lot of yak, stuff like that. They're going to do that with Mac. They're also going to let him fly, but
he should
walk into the right position.
He has to redshirt this year, man. He has to. Unless Cam is that bad.
Unless Cam is as bad as he was last year, he's redshirting. Belichick does not start rookie QBs.
That's a smart move.
And look, I mean, if anything, we have proven evidence that the Patriots, when they get like an immobile game manager, can't throw outside the numbers quarterback, they can win Super Bowls with that guy. So, you know, it really is a perfect spot for Mac.
One draft pick I want to talk to you guys about, and I love it how the Niners took Lance, and then obviously he's a project, but then how Jed York comes on and say, oh yeah, Lance made redshirt for 2 years. I'm like, you don't draft 3 overall and mortgage your future for a guy to redshirt until 2023. I'm sorry, this is not college.
I think they're just hoping they can get something back for Garoppolo, and they're just trying to protect the trade value. Like, they're not going to give him up for anything, which is a smart thing to do. But we all know damn well he's not waiting 2 years to get in the damn game.
I think they're screwed now unless someone gets injured. Like,
which it's going to have to be happens. A Teddy Bridgewater incident.
That would be it. But where? Like, it would take. Oh, I thought you meant traded him to the Broncos. But no. I mean, yeah, it would require a quarterback getting hurt in training camp and someone giving fucking the Niners a big pick. Because, like,
remember, the Vikings gave up a first-rounder to get Sam Bradford when Bridgewater had that horrific leg injury.
Yeah, and I totally do buy that they're comfortable, like, with – I mean, look, Trey Lance, I like him. He's only played one game in 2 years. He has never even played at the Division I level. I mean, the Power 5 Division I level or the general FBS level. So it does make sense that you would want a different quarterback starting in the short term, but it's just not going to extend past a year. It just can't. Next March, we know how this goes. Next March, maybe the Giants give up on Daniel Jones. Maybe the Panthers give up on Sam Darnold. Maybe the Broncos give up on Drew Lock and Teddy. There's going to be a team that wants a quarterback that offers them a pick, and they'll give them up. Like,
but the thing for me, man, is you still have the Deshaun Watson situation going on, and he's going to play again someday. And you still have what's going on with Aaron Rodgers. So, I mean, I'm sure teams are holding out hope for those situations as well.
Although, Danny, did you see the report that apparently the Eagles have been opening some doors behind the scenes on Deshaun Watson?
Yeah, I told Bobby that, man. I was like, listen, I totally can see Deshaun being an Eagle, and he's just not about it. Like, I think that's where he ends up, to be honest with you, as of today.
I don't know if he plays this year, but he's going to show up right before training camp so he gets his guaranteed dollars, and then he may be on the commissioner's list this year. I think that's what happens, and then I still don't know why they took Davis Mills with their first pick of the draft at 67.
We can say, hey, Lord.
I also saw the Patriots really like Davis Mills, so that might have been your guys' pick if you didn't go Mac, and I'm sure Belichick and Pizarro were talking about that, so I'm sure that's why that was the pick.
I think that if we didn't take Mac, I think we took Garoppolo. I think we trade for Garoppolo. That's what I think would have happened.
Well, it's possible, yeah.
We'll see. If you could make the deal work, it's possible. But yeah, I would say I wouldn't rule out Garoppolo to New England ever again at this point, but we're getting close to that because you have to give Mac multiple years, right? So by that point, who knows if Jimmy G is even as attractive as he is now. Maybe Jimmy gets hurt again. That could have been your last chance at it, and now it's just time to move on.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is a good
the
thing.
One thing I'm,
it is yeah. a good, I agree with you, Danny.
The only thing I'm going to say about San Francisco, sorry to cut you off.
No.
The player that concerns me the most coming off injury, though, is Nick Bosa. Like, defensive edge, and I don't know how many defensive edges have come back from an ACL and been the same player, so we'll see. That's my one big concern for that team, that's all. Like, I think Kittle will be fine, Samuel will be fine. We'll see if it's Garoppolo or Lance, and even Raheem Mostert's the other one that's a big question mark.
He was injured in college too, man. So I really hope this doesn't become a trend for him that he's an injury-prone player because he's great. But yeah, man. Hopefully he doesn't lose the explosiveness because that guy, you know, he's on his way for a damn good career.
I also like the Trey Sermon pick for the Niners.
Yeah, I like Trey Sermon a lot too.
I quietly also like the Elijah Mitchell pick in the sixth round. Now I get it. There is like a redundancy there, but I think he's really, really good. It's a sixth round pick. You're not going to find a cornerback in the sixth round or an offensive tackle or anything like that. So just get a good player. And I think he's good. I was investigating him a lot because I have him in one of my dynasty leagues. And I think it's a good pick. I think he's a good fit there. He's fast. And Shanahan loves his fast guys.
Well, yeah, we see it with Ayuk, Samuel. Like, their receiving core is going to be good this year. But that division as a whole just intrigues me because I feel like it can go either way. But I don't know, did you guys see the video of the Lions reacting to getting Sewell, like what Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell did?
Yeah.
You don't want to know why that is?
Why?
Because it came out today that Brad Holmes tried to trade up with Atlanta at 4 to go get Sewell because they didn't think he would be there. But then I guess Atlanta wanted a lot for it, and they said no. And when the fact they didn't have to give up assets and they still got their guy at 7, they were just over the moon for it.
Don't believe any of the bullshit that Chris Greer tells you. If that had happened, I think Kyle Pitts is wearing a Miami Dolphins uniform.
Which well, is probably what, if the Lions move up for Sewell?
Yeah, because the Falcons would have gone down to 7. The Dolphins would have picked ahead of them.
Mm-hmm. I think the Bengals would have taken him, and you guys would have had Jamar Chase.
I don't know if the Bengals would have taken him over Chase, but I mean, we'll never know. You might be right.
Yeah. I don't.
Thank you. Thank you, Lions.
You know what, though? The Detroit Lions, they actually did not have that bad of a draft, in my opinion. I think they built towards the future. With that being said, they're still going to suck. But, hey, at least there's, like, a little bit of optimism for them now, I guess, to give their fans hope for the future.
In classic Campbell fashion, their first three picks averaged, like, 310 pounds.
Yeah, and
Ali McNeil. Sorry, Danny, go ahead.
No. If you have a team as bad as the Lions, how it's so impossible to have a bad draft, man. And, you know, a team like the Texans figured out to do it. I know they didn't have the draft capital, but, you know, I think people are, they're praising the Lions, but at the same time, like, how hard was it for them to have a bad draft?
I agree with you. But my counter would be they at least, like, they went to the right places, you know?
Yeah, they went inside out. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, they didn't go safety. They didn't go receiver. They didn't go linebacker. They picked O-line and D-line their first three picks. Like, that's what you should do when you're in this situation. So from that perspective, I do think they deserve credit for,
In 2 to 3 years from now, if Justin Fields is an all-pro, Pro Bowl quarterback, they're gonna look bad. They just will.
I think there's a good chance I don't think they give up on Jared Goff that quickly because of the fact they took on the whole contract.
Yeah, it is kind of expensive to pay both for the next few years. But look, I mean, they're also realistic about themselves. They know they'll probably be in the top 10 again next year. There will be a similar chance. You know, maybe if you really believe in Fields, yes, it was a mistake, but I don't know, man. Shouldn't we as football fans? I know most of NFL Twitter that I follow seem to really like Fields, and I understand it. Shouldn't we as football fans put some credence into the fact that the NFL as a whole just wasn't as impressed with this guy as we were? And the one team that was is one of the dumbest front offices in the league.
I'm gonna say no because year after year, these stupid GMs pass on these talents, and it bites them in their ass. Every year, almost. Like, come on, man. Like, I think that's why Zach Wilson went number two, Trey Lance went number three, because now people are willing to gamble on these quarterbacks with the tangibles and the upside that they don't want to miss out.
But I will say, listen, I'm not going to make the lazy excuse that they're both from the same school, that they're both like the same person. I know that. I just remember in 2019, people forget, when Dwayne Haskins was falling down the draft board, it wasn't this level of outcry because he wasn't as successful as Justin Fields was, but people were pissed. I remember people were pissed that he was falling that far. And now here we are 2 years later, we look back on it and we're like, oh, actually, maybe the NFL was right. Maybe the Giants were right to take Daniel Jones ahead of him. Again, not saying we know that for sure because Daniel Jones has his own problems. I'm just saying we should have maybe given the NFL a little more credit back then for passing on him. And they just did it again with Fields. And like, you know, what if they're right again?
Can I say one other thing about Daniel Jones?
Yeah.
If he can be a league average quarterback, I think there's a good chance the Giants make the playoffs. I am not saying he has to come out and be an MVP. If he can be average and limit his turnovers, he gets a job for going forward. Like, look at Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, the turnovers are a big thing. Me and you, I remember talking about this before on the show. The two biggest stat inconsistencies are when people post quarterback touchdowns without the rushing touchdowns. Like, how many times have you seen Cam Newton had 8 touchdowns, 10 interceptions last year, when obviously his touchdown number was much higher than that? The other one is not counting quarterback fumbles the same as we do interceptions. And that's the thing with Daniel Jones. Is like when he was a rookie, he led the league in fumbles amongst quarterbacks by a mile, by a mile. So that's something to watch for.
You basically just quoted Mina Kimes' Twitter bio where it says QB touchdowns is not a stat.
And he still has no
O-line, yeah, I mean, man. Fumbles hurt your offense the exact same amount as an interception, if not more so, because the field position is better when a quarterback fumbles at the line of scrimmage than when they throw an interception downfield.
I full-heartedly agree with that. Like, but going back to, let's see, what team were we just talking about? What team were we talking about before Daniel Jones? I kind of brain farted there.
The Lions.
I think there's a good chance they take, like, Sam Howell or Slovis next year and then, you know, redshirt him for 2022, and then they try to get out of Goff in 2 years when it's not as bad. Like, it's the same thing with them as it is with the, what's the team? The Atlanta Falcons. Like, I knew the Falcons weren't going to draft a quarterback just because Matt Ryan's dead cap hit for the next 2 years is ridiculous. I think it's like $30 million.
I want to see what they do with Julio, though. I really want to see if they move off of him. I don't think they do.
There's a lot of smoke that they are going to. I think it was Ryan McDowell, who's a fantasy analyst, so take it for what it's worth. But he said an insider told him with certainty that Julio will not be on the team next year because he has to be. I think he has to be cut or traded after June 1st, and that's one of the reasons why it hasn't happened yet. But there's heavy speculation on that.
See, if they
no.
When they chose to stick with Matt Ryan and not draft a backup quarterback, because, you know, they're expecting to win games, that means. And who knows when they'll be drafted at number four again. Why not draft your quarterback right then and there, then? I don't understand that. Clearly going to win games. They're trying to win games.
Well, there was a rumor that they liked Trey Lance, who obviously didn't fall to them. Secondly, maybe they didn't like Justin Fields. I keep going back to this. Maybe they didn't like Justin Fields.
I mean, it's possible. Mac was still there too, man. And then there was a lot of smoke about the Niners. I know they didn't, and it was all smoke screen. But you know, they could have took Mac. They could have traded back. I think they had their eyes on Pitts the whole time.
We know the flaws with Mac. Resident Patriots fan Griff over here was ripping him before the draft.
No, I'm not a believer in Mac either. But like, I think their pick was always Kyle Pitts.
Oh, the Falcons, 100%.
That's what I'm saying. And that means they believe in Matt Ryan and they're expecting to win games.
But don't you also think that like taking Pitts makes even more sense if Julio's not going to be on the team?
Because at least they do have Calvin Ridley, but you want to give your quarterback all his weapons to win games because they expect to win games. Julio can still play, man.
He can't remember when they couldn't stay on the field last year though.
And he's expensive. He's really expensive.
I don't know. Whoever gets that man is going to be. I really hope he doesn't become a Patriot. That's all I'll say.
Remember when it was Roddy White and Julio Jones running the show down in Atlanta? Now it's like, look, that era of wide receivers may be gone for the Falcons.
And now they just changed Calvin Ridley and Kyle Pitts.
Yeah. But I think Atlanta's also trying to go for a run approach, too, because that's the Arthur Smith offense, which, fun fact about him, I don't know if you guys know this, his father is the one who founded FedEx.
Yeah, I did know that, because we almost hired him as head coach, or we were looking into him. Yeah, I did know that.
And I remember there were a lot of people criticizing him for having a leg into football in a way that other people didn't. Even though, as we know, he did a good job in Tennessee.
Yeah, which I'm gonna agree with Danny. Want to bring up something that Danny said on this podcast? I wouldn't be shocked if the Titans took a step back this year. Like I say that, but then I remember, oh yeah, they got Derrick Henry. So it's just like we'll see what happens. But I wouldn't be shocked if it's not the same that. I'm going to be, if it's not the same offense as we've seen in the past. And the other one, too, is I wouldn't be shocked to see the Rams defense take a step back without Brandon Staley.
I agree on both counts, especially with the Titans, because they lost two very important offensive players. We all know that in Corey and Johnu.
Danny and I aren't mad about that.
They cut all their cornerbacks. They literally cut all their cornerbacks. And now they're kind of, Farley might be good. He has medical issues, and we just know this. We see this year after year. Rookie cornerbacks just get torched, like, all the time. The Vikings were starting so many rookies in their secondary last year, and they got destroyed. And Mike Zimmer said it was the worst defense I've ever had, and he's like a defensive mastermind. Like, if you're relying on a rookie cornerback, I mean, you're almost certainly going to have a bad secondary. And that's just – it's hard to win. Yeah.
Look at Jack Okuda.
Yeah, another example. And he was supposed to be, like, the best cornerback – prospect of like the last 10 years.
Yeah. One cornerback prospect I do not like and I think will be a bust is Patrick Surtain. I'm sorry. I see D. Milner all over that guy.
The Panthers kid is good though. J.C. Horn?
Yeah, J.C. Horn I love. Yeah. I love J.C. Horn. Patrick Surtain, no.
We'll see. You know one corner pick I love though?
Which one?
Asante Samuel going to the Chargers.
In the second round too, right?
Yeah.
That was good value.
Great value.
Two great defensive values with them, and then Christian Barmore, baby.
That was a phenomenal pick in the second round. I was very annoyed when you guys got him.
Also, to Ronnie Perkins.
I wanted Ronnie Perkins. I did want Ronnie Perkins. I like him.
My team drafted a line play in the first round, so they weren't in position to get them in the later rounds. But Perkins was great value.
Who'd you get in the second round? The second pick? I know you got the safety, and then it was it Landon?
No, it was Liam Eichenberg.
Liam, okay. Yeah, that's Notre Dame always has fucking good O-linemen.
I like 100%.
I like the pick a lot. He might – good chance he starts week one.
I like the Javon Holland pick for the Dolphins too.
He's great.
The TCU guy?
Yeah, he's – Holland profiles more as a natural free safety than the TCU guy does. So, and they cut Bobby McCain like 2 days after the draft, which was just like a brutal Patriots level move to cut like a team leader, someone who was part of the rebuilding team in 2019, who loved the Dolphins, and he doesn't get cut in March, so he could sign with another team. It's like, oh shit, we drafted your replacement, so goodbye, you're gone. Just savage, like.
No. Doing a Patriot would be cutting him the week before camp. Like what they did with Lawyer Malloy back in 2003 when they brought in Rodney Harrison.
Yeah, that would be, in fact, even more brutal. Giving him the Jets did that with David Harris, too, didn't they? A few years ago?
Nick Mangold, they did him dirty, too.
God, it's rough. But yeah, Bobby was a lovable team leader, and then it just get cut because they drafted Javon Holland. Brutal.
Yeah. Hey, what did you think of the Hunter Long pick, by the way?
I wasn't a fan. I didn't think it was an important need. And I don't think you have to always draft needs, but it's got to be ignore need if you're going to get a really good player at a really important position. Even if we have a bunch of edge rushers, just get another one. It's fine. I don't care that you drafted Jalen Phillips in the first round. Get another one. It's fine with me. I didn't like it that much. They have some solid tight ends. You know, Adam Shaheen mid season, so they like him as their second tight end, along with Jerm Smythe. So I think it's more so insurance. If they can't agree to an extension with Gesicki, it's insurance that they'll at least have someone else in the tight end room that they could trust. But I just thought it was too much of a luxury when the team has like so many other holes and they have so many tight backup. They have two backup tight ends they trust. How many teams in the league have that? So I just didn't think it was necessary. But he's good. I like him as a player. And if they can't re-sign Gesicki, he'll be their long-term starter. But that's just kind of shitty because I would rather have Gesicki as my long-term starter than this guy. It's not like he's Kyle Pitts. So, yeah, I wasn't too thrilled with it. But he's good. Don't get me wrong. He's definitely good.
No, for sure. I just want to go back to the schedule, though, because obviously that's what we're here for. So, Big Rat, I don't know if you've seen it. I'm going to riddle off for both of you guys, because I did with Danny before you got in the call, all of these Sunday night football games, and I want you to pick two games on here that you see, or two games, one that you think is going to be the most intriguing of the year, and one that's going to be potentially cut from the lineup. So after Bears and Rams, we have Chiefs-Ravens, Packers-Niners, Bucks-Patriots, Bills and Chiefs, Seahawks-Steelers, Colts-Niners, Cowboys-Vikings, Titans-Rams, Chiefs-Raiders, Steelers-Chargers, Bills and Saints is the Thanksgiving night game, which we'll talk about in a bit. Browns-Ravens, Niners-Hawks, Bears-Packers, Saints-Bucks, football team, Cowboys, and Vikings-Giants.
You mean Vikings-Packers, no?
Vikings-Packers, excuse me. Not Vikings and Giants. I would be questioning humanity if that was a Sunday night game.
I love how for December almost all these games are division games. So it makes all those games pretty important. It makes it harder to flex any of them out because they all could be involved in the division race. Preliminarily, I'll say that the one, I mean, Bucks Patriots is too easy. Like, I'm not gonna take that candy. That's like being thrown in my face right there. One of the ones I guess I'm interested personally would be the Browns-Ravens game. The Browns have never beaten them didn't beat them last year. So I think it'll be fun. Both teams are probably going to be good. They'll have high stakes. They had, in my opinion, the best game of the season last year, including playoffs. Even though the playoffs were kind of meh this year. But the Browns-Ravens would be the one that I'm most looking forward to. And then I'll put another random one up there. I'll put Cowboys-Vikings because Mike Zimmer – it's a very weird thing with Mike Zimmer, but every other year his team is good. And then every year in between, his team is mediocre. We forget about them. Like 2014, 7-9, 2015 playoffs, 2016, 8-8, 2017 conference title game, 2018, 8-7-1, 2019 divisional round. Last year, mediocre. So they're kind of up and down in this way. So I could see them being good and the Cowboys being a fun offense that I think that game could be like a sneaky, this could have important wild card implications for both teams. And then the one that could get flexed out, I guess the easy answer is Steelers Chargers. If the Steelers aren't as good as people think by then, but I don't know. It's going to be hard to flex any of these games out. Bears Packers, maybe if the Bears are bad by then, if the Bears are projecting to be like a 5-win team with a rookie quarterback, you can easily take that one out. So I guess that's the other one.
No, yeah, for sure. I would say the same game too. Like I'm obviously biased. I'm not going to say Bucks Patriots because, like you said, that's just too easy. The one I'm going to say for intriguing is that Colts Niners game week 7. I think that's got a lot of potential to be a really good game.
Yeah.
Kyle Shanahan offense going against the Matt Eberflus defense. And for flex out, I gotta go Bears-Packers. I'm sorry. Like, I feel like I love the spot for the Vikings and Vikings-Packers. But, Danny, while you go, I'm actually going to look and see that week 14. I'm going to see what the options are for overall games of what could get flexed in that spot.
Yeah, for my most intrigued, it's got to be week 4. Bucks and Patriots, man. Like, the story writes itself there. I wish it was later in the season, but, you know, definitely that one. I would have liked to see that played in the wintertime.
The one benefit, sorry to cut you off, I just want to say the one benefit is the earlier in the year, the more it guarantees that both teams are, like, relevant. Like, if the Patriots are out of it again by the end of the year like they were last year, you know, you don't run that risk.
Of course. And then the one that doesn't really intrigue me this year is going to be, I'll say week 13, Seattle and the Niners. I don't think any of them, both of them will be that great. Not saying that it's going to get flexed out, but I don't expect them to be, you know, that great of teams. You can also say the Packers and the Bears. But as far as being flexed out, you got to go with week 17, Packers and Vikings. I know Big Red just made the point on Mike Zimmer, but you know, I just don't see the talent there on the Vikings, as far as the defense at least. And I do not like Kirk Cousins.
I don't either, for the record. Granted, he was the quarterback of the team 2 years ago and they still made a deep run. I don't like him either. But the offense is really talented, as for all the obvious reasons, we don't have to say them. And remember everything I said earlier about rookie cornerbacks struggling as rookies, maybe in the second year, all those like young guys they play in the secondary, like Gladney, like Cameron Dantzler, like maybe they start playing a lot better. So that would be the argument.
I think in week 17, I think there's going to be like higher state games available to flex into that.
You're probably right.
To go to Danny's point, just looking at week 17 right now, not a lot. The only one I see right here is 425 Rams and Ravens. Besides that, it's pretty – like both weeks, the games are – shit, for that matter. Like, even week 14, too. Like, the only other game that I see that could be Sunday Night Football is Bills and Buccaneers, but that's a 425 game, so I feel like CBS probably probably did a lot of bargaining to get that one on their schedule.
Wow, yeah, aren't they on it, too.
Aren't they untouchable once they're 425? I think, like, they're locked into CBS, no?
More than likely, unless one of the teams ends up being bad.
Here... the only other one, and it's kind of a stretch, is like they won't. Okay, so they won't do Raiders and KC because that's another Sunday night game earlier in the year. They won't do that twice. So I understand that. But it is a really terrible schedule. Rams, Cardinals, maybe it's possible.
They don't flex Monday night.
Oh, that is Monday night. That's right. Actually,
the Thursday nighter is the one that the Thursday night of that week, even too. By that point, that game can be kind of sticky with, I know it's a weird word, I meant sticky just in a bad way, like kind of get out of it. Steelers and Vikings.
Yeah. I mean, because like the week is so weird. Like all the projected bad teams are playing someone important. So it's like Danny's Jets are playing the Saints. So that takes the Saints out of it. The Texans are facing the Seahawks. That takes them out of it. Like, the Titans are facing the Jaguars. That takes the Titans out of it. Like, yeah, it's a tough one.
Yeah. Depends on the standings, man. Any team can surprise, you know? We probably went over a game that might be in consideration, you know, because they're doing that.
Like Jets Saints. That's actually going to be the one.
Jeez.
Moving on, I want to talk Thanksgiving with you guys because there's obviously – hopefully we get all three games this year, but we got – Chicago at Detroit, Vegas at Dallas, and Buffalo at New Orleans. How do we feel about this nice little slate we got here on Thanksgiving?
It's like the normal Thanksgiving lineup. Nothing too exciting, you know. But, you know, the night game looks really good. As far as the Lions, you know, they have to get a game. So, you know, we have to go through that. Cowboys as well. You know, it's just, you know, it's a nice day off. Nice day off to watch football. Nothing too crazy, but the Sunday night game was good. Or the Thursday night game, I'm sorry.
That's all good. Go on, Big Rat.
No, you go. I'm reading the Monday night schedule anyways. Go for it.
No problem. We can talk about that next. The only thing I'm going to say is I wish for the 12:30 they would go with someone else. Because, like, I remember 2018 and 2019, I'm pretty sure both games were the Bears at the Lions. So I wish they would have done someone like, even if they did the Vikings or the Packers. Like I said earlier, Raiders, Cowboys, I don't really have a problem with just because it's a nostalgic game, but Bills and Saints is a game that could be electric. Like Danny is out of this call. That's just the thing right there that just really intrigues me about that. Like, do you agree with that, Big Rat?
I do. Ultimately I'm not going to complain because like it is ultimately a good choice. I'm concerned. I think the Saints are going to be good. I think the Saints are going to be better than what the Patriots were last year because they don't have all the problem with opt-outs. They won't have the problem with with the cap issue where they couldn't bring back some players, not just the quarterback, obviously. The Saints were able to figure out their cap, and the roster is still really, really talented, more talented than New England's was going into Brady's last year. But I'm concerned if the Saints are, like, bad or average, that kind of kills the Thanksgiving game. I'm concerned if Josh Allen turns back into the Josh Allen of 2019, that could kill the Thanksgiving game. But on paper, it should be good. I would just, for me personally, like, I think there's so much, this is the only rant I wanted to go on today. Like, I think there's so much potential on this day. It's such a fun day. With the rise in gambling, like, DFS is huge on Thanksgiving these days. Huge. Because everyone, like, wants to gamble a little bit while they're with their families, eating, watching football. And we have to have the Lions and the Cowboys there out of tradition. Fine. And it means we have to get guaranteed one bad game, one bad team in a game this year because of Detroit. But so for as a result, the Thanksgiving night game I take very, very seriously. And I really always hope, can we just, like, make it a guarantee that the teams are going to be good? The way you guarantee it is, like, make sure the quarterback situation is great for both teams. And for Buffalo and New Orleans, we don't quite know that. If that's Taysom Hill leading a 3-6 Saints team, that's kind of concerning to me. Now, obviously, like, I'm not saying the Saints will be that bad, but to just guarantee that it's not a bad game, like, throw the Chiefs on there, you know? Throw the Chiefs. Throw the Packers on there if we had assurances that Rodgers was going to stay. Like, that's the kind of thing I would do if I were in charge of this. The Saints are likely safe. With Jameis and Sean Payton, it'll likely be fine. So, again, I'm not really complaining. I just, me personally, I would just make sure that, like, put Russell Wilson there. Like, make sure the quarterback is going to be great to most likely guarantee that the Thanksgiving night game would be good, because that's the only flexibility we have in the schedule. But otherwise, I'm fine with it.
No, yeah, I'm the same way. One big thing I'm going to say about the Bills this year that intrigues me, how are they going to feel? Because for years, they were the hunters. Now they're the hunted. Like, every time people go in to play Buffalo now, they're going to want to beat them. It's not like before where it was a cupcake, like, or Buffalo was bad. Like, now that Buffalo is the kings of the crop in the AFC East, I want to see how they handle that pressure. Do they get better with it, or do they get worse?
Yeah, I agree. You know, I'm still, like I said before, I'm still not all the way sold on Josh Allen, and I still won't be, because I really think Brian Daboll is, that guy is literally the best thing that's ever happened to that guy. You know, like, I've seen people that are high on Mitch Trubisky going to Buffalo because of Brian Daboll, which is insane, but I don't know. People still believe in that guy. You know, I think they'll still be fine. You know, they'll still win 11-12, and you know, they'll go on to win the AFC East, but we'll see. They have pressure this year.
Go on.
No, just, Josh, remember, 2019, going into the season, people were very high on the Rams, coming off a Super Bowl appearance. They didn't look good in the game, but nonetheless, coming off a Super Bowl. And the Rams got a lot of primetime games, and, you know, they regressed. They regressed hard with Jared Goff. And that's what we got to watch with the Bills. Are they going to be like the 2018-2019 Rams? And no one should tell me that they are better than that Rams team was, because the Rams team went deeper into the playoffs in a tougher conference than the Bills team did last year. So I don't want to have a recency bias on that. So we'll see. They're going to be an interesting one to watch. Their O-line last year was very healthy. Josh Allen was pretty bad under pressure last year. He was like 22nd in the NFL. We saw that in the playoff game. When he takes sacks, they are like horrible, back-breaking 20-yard sacks. Like, it's ridiculous. And last year, all his O-linemen were healthy. If there's some O-line injuries, if his pocket gets a little more condensed, is he going to panic and fumble and take a bad sack or throw a pick like he did most of his career before last year, where he was rarely pressured? So we'll see.
Yeah, because even looking at their schedule, they kind of have a pretty easy opening. Like, they have Steelers, Dolphins, football team, Texans, but then they have Chiefs and Titans on the road, both in primetime. So, like, yeah, even look at their schedule. Let's see. They have 1, 2, 3, 4. They have 4 primetime games this year.
The Bills.
Yeah, the Bills.
So the thing with them that I do like is, you know, they didn't really lose anything. As far as their roster, and they added pass rush, which is what they really needed. So, And who else? They added Emmanuel Sanders as well, right?
Yeah.
I think he went there. So that's a nice little upgrade. I'm still questioned at their running back position, but you know, people are still high on Singletary and Zach Moss, so we'll see with that. I don't know, man. It's going to be a competitive division. That's all I'll say. I don't think they're going to slide away with it, but they should definitely win it.
Now, why? I thought the Dolphins sucked.
I don't know, man. It really depends with the Dolphins. I don't think they suck, but I think they are overrated.
Moving on now.
Wait, what were you going to say, Chris?
The only thing I was going to say with the Bills is I don't know if they'll go like 14-3 this year, but I can see them maybe doing winning 13 again, but losing one or even going 12-5.
I will say I don't think they should sweep the Dolphins again. Brian Flores has never beaten the Bills. Josh Allen owns the Miami Dolphins, owns them. And Brian Flores, defensive mastermind, gets his ass kicked whenever they play the Bills. They don't just lose. They get torched when they play Josh Allen. Torched. Like 400-yard passing, torched. So I would like to think that can't possibly continue, but who knows? So right there, if they win one of those games, that takes away a win from last year.
I think the same thing, too. I don't think New England gets swept by them again this year either.
Yeah, they almost beat them. They almost beat them with last year's team in Buffalo.
Yep. And then Week 16 was Buffalo just decided. I thought Buffalo was just being way too aggressive. I say this, and a lot of people fight me on it. I still firmly do believe that the Patriots will forever live rent free in the head of Bills Mafia.
And all of us, bro.
Bills fans especially. Like you never saw Dolphins fans or Jet fans really heckling Brady to the extent of throwing dildos on the field and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like that. And also, to the fact that Tom was, like, I think, like, basically owned them. I think he lost, like, two career games in that stadium.
And was it one of them the only Bills game you traveled to?
Yep.
That's that Griff luck right there.
Yeah, 2011.
The statistical odds of that, like this year, we're going to go to the Buffalo to go to the Pats game, and that's the one they lose.
Who would start at Fitzpatrick? For the Bills?
I don't know. 2011,
I think so.
Yeah, it had to be Fitz. Jeez. The Bills were terrible forever, man.
This was like those years, though. Like, you know how we were talking earlier about the Raiders, how they got off to a hot start and then they just flame out?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. It was like the same thing for the Bills back then. They were like 3-0 and they got off this great start, and then after that they like beating the Patriots is always their peak, and then they just sat down from there. Like in that game, Brady got picked off 4 times.
And they were like routinely dominant like in September and October. They would start like 5-1. Like that's
I remember.
Yeah, then they would just get killed.
Yeah, my exact points.
It's the Mario Williams team.
Yeah. But you know what? Like, that's just the past. I was telling Danny off before we started recording Big Red, like, I'm saying this on camera right now, I'm going to try my hardest to be at that game Week 4 against the Buccaneers, but yeah. I do not want to, like, go broke doing it, you know?
Yeah, makes sense. You know, it's a memorable game. It's a very unique game. It's one you'll carry with you. You know, I think Belichick knows that, you know, that game manager of a quarterback cannot play under pressure anymore like he could a few years ago. 32nd in the NFL against passer rating under pressure. Don't know if I've mentioned that yet. I think it'll be a fun one. I think yes, you don't want to go broke, but it's definitely like a more important than a traditional regular season game. So I see why there's more urgency.
Exactly. Also, too, the whole border situation with COVID really impacts it as well.
Yeah, that's another.
How would you feel if they lost that game? You're going to be too mad, right?
No. Like, it's going to be one of those things where it's like a wrestling feud. It's like, hey, look, like, say if there's a feud where it's not heel versus face, where it's just two guys facing off, where it's like, hey, we're all friends, or like how in the UFC, they're all good with each other, there's no, like, hostility, but then the second that cage door shuts, like, once kickoff starts, I'm gonna want to beat them. But if we lose, I'm not going to be mad. Like, I'm going to say this right now. I fully expect us to lose that game on October 3rd.
Wow.
Well, look at it. I think the Bucks are going to have a season like the Patriots have had in years past, you know, where they get off this like really hot start and then they kind of falter down the line a little bit where people start to like doubt Tom and, oh, can he get back to the Super Bowl? And then he just sneezes and he ends up there, you know?
Yeah, like when he, you know, or he could do that thing like last year's playoffs where he plays kind of meh, but like the defense is playing lights out, getting multiple turnovers every game. And then they can, he can just kind of walk into the Super Bowl that way too.
Exactly. I know they got all their players signed next year, but like this year, but man, I don't know how they're going to handle next year with Devin White getting extended. Cause like, I don't think he's getting optioned. I think he's getting long-term money.
Depends how much the cap goes up.
Yeah. That's a big thing too.
And I mean, don't you like this whole thing about like, you know, just re-sign all their starters. There's, look, obviously it's continuity. Obviously that's a good thing. But it's also kind of, I saw an interesting compare. Apparently, like, the Bucks of 2002 did something very similar. They won a Super Bowl. They retained most of their players. They signed, like, no outside free agents. And it's just kind of
Chris Sims.
And it's kind of hard to keep winning that way. Like, to just, like, because people, we know this. Like, the sport changes. Like, teams change. Teams evolve. You know, and they're essentially just running back the same team. They'll be an interesting case study.
Did the Chiefs bring anyone in last year that was dramatically new?
They had like 20 of 22 starters from that Super Bowl in 2019. Besides that, I think they had more significant of a free agency class this year than last year.
Oh, for sure. What they did on the O-line, I've never seen the O-line rebuilt like that.
But with the Chiefs, like Mahomes, it's different when you still have an elite quarterback. Look. Like, I've made a ton of jokes in this podcast about Brady's, like, legacy and career and all that. We all agree he's not an elite quarterback right now, like, no matter what you think of his past. So, like, that's, you know, it's different. It's different when you don't have some a Mahomes-level figure, a Russell Wilson, a Rodgers, et cetera.
Oh, yeah, I get that completely. Like, with Tom last year, like, it just helped that, you know what, Todd Bowles had the game plan of his life against Patrick Mahomes and shut him down completely.
They were 11-5 in the regular season. It's not like they were invincible.
They lost to the Nick Foles Bears, for fuck's sakes.
They almost lost to the Daniel Jones Giants.
Yeah.
We were recording during the game.
Yeah, I called that. That's one of the bets. I hate myself when I do this. I always make these like bold bets, and I don't ever make them. I just say, oh, hey, I think this is going to happen, and then I go, fuck, I should have bet that. That was one of them, because the Buccaneers were an 11.5-point favorite. I knew the Giants were going to cover that spread.
I was on Giants money line that night too, man. I was sick. Oh, that would have been a payday.
When Daniel Jones fucked up the 2-point conversion, oh, man, awful. It hurt. Yeah. It hurt a lot. Griff, if it makes you feel better, me and Danny know the opposite feeling. When we're super confident, we actually do place the bet and then get destroyed and rip up our ticket into shreds.
Yeah. Oh, see, that was me like a bunch of times this past year.
I did, even though I disagreed with Danny on the show about the Bucks constantly throughout the playoffs, and I was wrong every single week, I then proceeded to bet $800 on them to win the Super Bowl and made out big. It was a nice...
Yeah, I did well on them too, man. That was a good day, the Super Bowl.
It's subtle.
Oh, the only thing I want to say about betting, though, is I love how a few years ago, this was like a boogeyman to the NFL they had won no business in part of. Now they have FanDuel, DraftKings, and I think another betting partner, and the stadium in New Orleans, the Superdome, a stadium you and I went to, Big Rat, I'm pretty sure that's the last time I saw you in person, is now named Caesars.
It's going to be funny when they start displaying the live lines, like at the bottom of the screen, you know, hats are now +6.5, you know, over under. That's when it's going to get crazy.
They're now
plus... You're going to have betting kiosks in all the stadiums. You're just going to have pure degenerates standing there the entire game, not even in their seats. They're just going to be betting every 5 minutes.
There's going to be some asshole that, like, buys, like, the wrong line or the wrong side or at the wrong price. Like, it's going to be hilarious.
Yep.
Yeah. No, it's just...
It's taking over.
Oh, betting is here to stay. It's not going anywhere.
Actually,
like, there's people I know who hate it, but it's here to stay.
No, I mean, the more states are legalizing it. The Action Network website, which I follow religiously for football and basketball, just got sold for a bunch of money. Like, it's on the way up. I mean, ESPN, TNT, the Heat were playing the Celtics yesterday. On TNT, and TNT's fucking posting the over-under, the spread, the money line. Like, this is TNT. This isn't some random Spike TV or anything like that.
Yeah, here in New York, you know, it's still illegal here, but, you know, the MSG Network, they'll have every commercial or every set of commercials, they'll have, all right, these are the live lines, you know, like, bet now, bet 365. Yep. I'm like, I can't even do this if I wanted to legally.
But they're still getting the advertising.
That's yeah, right. They're still advertising it, because you can in New Jersey, and MSG Network is in New Jersey as well, but damn.
Yeah. Isn't that big records? I know, are the Heat on Bally Sports?
Oh, they're on Bally. Yeah, it's the new network, Ballyhoot Sports. Or
isn't that how
it used
to
be
on Casino?
Fox Sports Sun, it's Fox Sports Net. And Bally Sports, I don't know. They just bought them recently, like a few weeks ago. I would guess so, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I just know it was a big changeover, and the graphics are fucking ugly for it. But no, like, oh, they're horrible. The fact, though, that there's all these betting partners, like the fact that DraftKings and FanDuel are now affiliated with the NFL, every Sunday when you watch the NFL Network, I swear, or even during the season, every commercial is going to be Pizza Hut, insurance, Bud Light, Viagra, Roman Swipes, and then DraftKings or FanDuel.
Yep.
It's so much untapped potential, too. Like, we haven't even seen, like, what the limits of it can look like. Like, it's going to be wild.
And the casinos always win, ladies and gentlemen.
Absolutely.
They do.
If you're listening, bet carefully, bet smartly, and there's a bunch of hotlines that you can call if you have a problem. So
the best advice I give is, look, bet with what you can. Bet with money you'll feel comfortable losing. Don't bet an amount you feel uncomfortable losing, where you're shaking because you lost that much. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Expect to lose, exactly. Expect to lose. And if you win, it's great.
Even the best bettors in the world, like, they'll be lucky if they win like 55% of the time. Like, that would be considered excellent. And that
elite,
those,
yep.
It's like when you hear someone made like, oh, someone bet like 300 grand on the Bucks to win the Super Bowl. And I'm just like, the fuck do people get this kind of money?
300.
Did you ever hear about the story about the Super Bowl streaker?
Oh, the guy who,
he
went streaking because he would get paid a lot of money to do it or something.
No, because he bet, there was a bet that someone was going to streak at the Super Bowl, so he put up 50 grand and he won like 375.
Smartest man alive.
That's a brilliant way to cash your own bet. My God.
And all he had to do was just pay his bail and stuff, which I think was like, I think it was 100,000 or something like that. So he still ended up walking away with like a quarter of a mil.
I can't imagine how infuriated the casino that had to pay out that bet must have
to take that bet too. Yeah, for 50 grand. Usually they limit the prop bets usually, but damn, they took that.
Yeah, and Vegas will take anything.
Yeah, the house always wins, though. People, be careful.
Yeah. Before we go, I just wanted to talk quickly about the two Christmas Day games that got announced, just to get your guys' feelings on them. And I'm just gonna look them up quickly, just so I know, like, for sure that I got the right ones. Like, I know, obviously, we could have talked about Monday Night Football, but when I looked at it, there's some games on there that kind of make you go, eh.
Yeah, it's not as good.
Like, the fact that, like, Lions and Packers this week, too. So, for Christmas, we have the Browns visiting the Browns and Packers at 4:30, and then at 8:15, we have got the Colts and Cardinals, which, in my opinion, those two could be very solid games.
Yeah, quality matchups there. When is Christmas this year? What day does it fall on?
Saturday.
It's a Saturday. Okay, yeah, that's quality. Yeah, that's quality right there, man. I like both of those games.
It's hard, and it's hard to envision any of those teams being, like, terrible, you know? Like, even if they're disappointing, they're, like, 8-8 disappointing. They're not, like, bottom of the league.
Yeah. Like, in the end, they're really trying to compete with the NBA, though.
The gambling that day is going to be crazy now. Christmas Day, everyone got their money and their gifts. Yeah, that's the day where gambling's going to be placed.
Trying to imagine, like, some guy, like, parlaying, like, Browns +8 and Knicks money line.
Because,
like,
yeah.
Throwing the Lakers and the Nets.
Like, it's going to be funny. It's going to be really good. But, yeah, both the Christmas Day game last year was a little disappointing. I mean, I guess it was fun to watch because it was historic, just seeing the Saints, like, destroy the Vikings. But if we get more competitive games, that'll definitely enhance the day. So I'm looking forward to it. Those two should work.
And Alvin Kamara winning people a lot of their fantasy leagues.
6 touchdowns, man.
Yep. Fun fact, in one of my fantasy leagues, I survived that performance. We won the league playing against Kamara because we had Rodgers and Brady. And the next day was the day the Bucks played the Lions, and Brady had like 4 touchdowns in the first half.
It was perfect. And he got pulled after the first half because of that.
And then Blaine Gabbert threw 2 touchdowns himself, or 3.
Well, anyway, guys, it's been a blast today. This is actually, I don't know if I said it off the top, but this was the 90th episode of YWC Football Talk.
Getting close to 100.
Yeah, and I'm very close. I'm definitely going to get there before the season starts.
Easily.
Yeah.
This was fun. The Knicks suck. They're frauds. They got destroyed by the Heat.
I was going to say the same thing, man.
They're a try-hard team that's not going to do well in a playoff series. So they're frauds.
My parting words to everyone, if you guys want to make some money this year, bet the under on the Miami Dolphins win total. Guaranteed hit right there. The Miami Heat are the most bipolar team in the league. They're not going to pull off what they did last year. There's no bubble this year. So do not bet on the Heat to win any playoff series. And yeah, that's it.
They're bipolar because Jimmy Butler was hurt. And then also, everyone, the Dolphins, to cash Danny's under, they'd have to go 9-8 or worse. So you're betting on them to be a 500 team when they were 10-6 last year. Thank you very much.
Bet against Tua. Please bet against Tua. QB4.
6-3 as a starter, 6-3 against the spread. Suck it.
Their secondary is old, people. It's not a strength.
Man, that was better than the Chiefs spread last year at 7-9.
the Jaguars spread was significantly better than the Chiefs too. But yeah,
the Jags were also 7-9 against the spread.
Well, because they were getting these, but look how they performed in November and December. They were like winning. They were dominant the last 2 months because they were getting these 10-point spreads every week, and they were losing close. It was so much fun to watch.
They almost beat the Packers and the Browns.
Vikings. They went to overtime with the Vikings.
Yeah.
Yeah, so don't listen to Danny. His Jets are going to be horrible again. He's going to get swept by both of me and Griff's teams. And yeah, it's going to be a fun time.
It's going to be all breaks week two for the New York Jets.
Zach Wilson, QB1.
Worst quarterback in the class.
Mac Jones will have a better NFL career than Zach Wilson. Good night, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to episode 90 of YWC Football Talk.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all had.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.